Kevin. When I got the announcement that this subject would be part of the presentation today, I immediately started thinking about presentations that I have been making over the past 2 or 3 years as Extension Soil Fertility Specialist to some of our producers in Alabama and in other regions of the Southeast. So I asked Kevin, did he think this would be appropriate? And he said, certainly. So I'm glad to share this with you today. This is a topic that I have been addressing more or less over the last 3 or 4 years with our growers in Alabama. And so this is an extension presentation. It's not a highly technical. I don't have a lot of data in it, but it is some of the strategies that we can deal with in the southeastern United States that address some of the issues that Paul brought it out about the right source, the right time, the right place, et cetera, the four R's. And I'm addressing individually some of those R's, because we know Paul has addressed very well what's happened with fertilizer prices. I started using this slide 3 years ago without the dotted lines going up on the right-hand side, and I found it so difficult to keep up with current prices, so I just continued to use the same slide and just drew those lines up. Because we were talking about this scale, $300 a ton for nitrate and urea, just 2 years ago, and now it's out of sight. These prices, though, are current as these are retail prices, current as of either last week or Monday, depending upon who I called and talked to get some of these prices. I was shocked to find out how much they have dropped since midsummer, when we reached an all-time high. This summer I was really perplexed, because urea was costing more than ammonium nitrate in our part of the state and the country, and that has just never happened before. But at one time, DAP was over $1.20, $1.30 per pound of nutrient, per pound of phosphorus. In fact, I checked with a Midwestern supplier, and it's still over a dollar a pound. But this price for DAP came from a local supplier there in Alabama that said he could get it, Paul, for $520 a ton, which is much cheaper than some of those fellows that you mentioned that have it and they have to sell it. But the important thing about this is I encourage our producers to look at the cost per pound of nutrient. Don't worry about the cost per ton. Look at the cost per pound of nutrient, and I'll explain why that's so important later on. In dealing with this, I've come up with four strategies that our producers in Alabama can use. They are not broad strategies, they're very narrow strategies, but tools that we already have at our disposal. And I'm one of those experienced guys that Paul talked about. I've been doing this for 25 years, and maybe I do look a little bit more to the past and what we have done rather than to the future. But one of those strategies, and my whole career has been built around soil testing and the technology supporting soil testing. I'll talk about how soil testing can fit in to today's strategies in dealing with the high cost. I want to talk about using legumes as cover crops. And of course, it being in the Southeast, if you're in Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Tennessee, Arkansas, poultry litter is a huge source of nutrients. And when I first started working in Alabama, and really up until about 2 years ago, a big part of my job was talking about the problem we have with excess poultry litter, the problem we have with it. I haven't talked about it in 2 years. We don't have a problem anymore. We're using every ton that we can get in Alabama. And then finally, this using the least expensive source of nitrogen where possible being the key word. Let's start with soil testing. I use this slide, soil test, because this is a soil test calibration experiment that we've been doing for years in Alabama. And I use this to point out, to make several points. One is to pay attention to that soil test results, but more importantly, pay attention to where the calibration was done. If you're living in Arkansas and you use a laboratory on the East Coast, make sure that those calibration is for Arkansas crops and Arkansas soils. Fortunately, though, for those labs in the southeastern United States, that are using the malic 1 extract. That would be Alabama, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, Tennessee. I think Virginia still uses the malic 1. For those states that are using the malic 1 procedure, this calibration works very well. This bar here represents the range and critical values for phosphorus for coastal plain soils in the southeast. And the dots there came from experiments that we have, long-term soil fertility experiments, all over the southern part of Alabama in the coastal plain. The important thing here is to note that once you get beyond this critical value, whether it's 25 parts per million like we use in Alabama or 30 parts per million like they use in South Carolina, once you get beyond this critical value, the response to phosphorus is very low. The probability of seeing a response to added phosphorus is very low. It's not a perfect fit. Paul showed that nice curved line, and that's the ideal. That's what our calibration is based upon, but this is reality. It doesn't fit a nice, pretty curved line. And our calibration from different states. Now, with that said, and I strongly emphasize to our producers, if your soils are testing in the high or the very high range, save your money. Phosphorus is the most expensive nutrient that we could have applied the past year. Don't put it out there. Our data shows you don't need it. If you don't need it, the probability of response is low. Don't put it out there. But once you get below this, yeah, the probability is pretty good that you will receive a response to added phosphorus. So that's when you use it. Now, the difficulty comes in is when we use another laboratory. And you may not know what his calibration is. And he may say it's testing low in phosphorus. But where does he draw that line? And one lab that tests a lot of samples in Alabama uses this as that critical line. There. That's okay if fertilizer prices were low, you could afford. He's going to recommend fertilizer. But the problem with this one is that actually he recommends fertilizer between this point and this point. He calls that a maintenance level. Yeah, if fertilizer is cheap, that ratio is low, you could probably afford to put some fertilizer out there. But in this day and age, That's a wasted money, and it's not money in the bank either, because we know fertilizer prices are coming down, so it's not money in the bank. So if you know where your calibration was done, make sure that the calibration for the lab that you're using is local calibration based upon the soils on your farm. Because in this particular case, we would stop recommending. The public labs would stop recommending phosphorus above this point, but this guy would continue to recommend phosphorus up to this soil test level here, which is clearly the probability of a response is very low. And if you're using Precision Ag and if you're using these data as the basis for your Precision Ag program, you're wasting a lot of money. There's a place where you can save some funds. Now, this is another site I'll skip over, but this is another calibration on a different soil in Alabama. This is that Decatur soil that Paul mentioned in the Tennessee Valley. We use a different calibration for that. It's a different soil. Be site specific, just like Paul told us to do. But the question invariably comes up when I talk about these data is that, well, if I don't put out any fertilizer phosphorus this year or next year, maybe even the next year, because my soil test says I don't need it, what's that going to do in the long term? These data came from one of several sites that we have where we've actually looked at this. This particular experiment, fertilizer phosphorus was applied at different rates up until 1982. And then for 15 years, no additional phosphorus was applied to those particular plots. And we monitored, we grew cotton, we grew corn, we grew wheat, and grew soybeans, mostly cotton, over this 15-year period. And notice the soil test phosphorus did not change over 15-year period. It's still testing high. When it tested high here, and this is the critical level, that 25 parts per million, when it tested high here in 1982 with no additional P, it was still testing high. There's a little up and down. This one is testing high, not quite as high, still testing high here. This one is right on the borderline. We'd probably recommend a little maintenance level there, but it hasn't changed any, really, after 15 years of no application. Of course, those that were testing low and none was applied, still testing low, and they would definitely need some phosphorus. Potassium, the same thing. We've monitored potassium. This happens to be one of our very sandy, low CEC soils in the southeastern part of Alabama. And yes, over a 15-year period with no application, potassium will drop in these soils. It started off testing high here in 1982 with no application. By 1996, we would have to start reapplying potassium. But that's 15 years. 15 years before we had to resume potassium application on that particular soil. This is another site, a little finer textured soil, higher CEC, and of course, potassium did not drop. Now, we see a lot of changes over 15-year periods. What causes that? Variation in how you took the sample. I can't explain why it goes up and down over a 15-year period. But basically, on this finer textured soil, potassium stayed in the high range over that 15-year period. And this is the very fine textured soil, higher potassium buffering capacity in the Tennessee Valley, and of course, it stayed high over a 15-year period. So really and truly, with growing cotton, and you're not removing a lot, and of course, Paul mentioned the fact that removal is important, but with cotton, with corn grain, with soybeans, with wheat, you don't take off a lot of nitrogen. Now, of course, we don't take off a lot of any nutrients, phosphorus and potassium primarily. Now, I'd like to show this slide from last year on our old rotation experiment, the oldest cotton study in the world. We did run into some potassium problems after 110 years. These plots received 60 pounds of K2O per acre per year, and doggone it, we had some pretty severe potash deficiencies that showed up in August. But the bottom line was that that crop produced 1,940 pounds of lint per acre where we irrigated last year. The reason we had the potash deficiency was because of the high yield potential that we had there. So, perhaps a little extra potassium may have pushed that yield up to 4 bales per acre, I don't know. But I was pretty pleased to get almost 4 bales per acre with 60 pounds of K2O. Second strategy, using legumes. Again, I go back to that old rotation experiment that I've had the privilege of working with for 25 years in Auburn. That experiment was started in 1896, primarily to look at what would it take for cotton to be sustainable on these highly erodible and highly low fertility soils of the southeastern region. It included plots with and without winter legumes. So we have been monitoring those for over 110 years now. And I think I can pretty well say that you can grow a good cotton crop in the southeastern United States using only winter legume nitrogen. This is 10-year average yields. I could have added some more recent yields in there. It wouldn't have changed that much. But where we've added no nitrogen and no legumes, just the P and K fertilization, but no nitrogen and no legumes, we're getting about the same cotton yield that we got 110 years ago. That's pretty much the baseline there, around 300, 400 pounds of lint per acre. Where we just use a winter legume, in the last few years it's been a crimson clover, an early crimson clover variety, we can boost that yield up to about a little over 2 bales per acre. Where we use just fertilizer nitrogen, just 120 pounds of nitrogen per acre, we can get about a little bit better than but no significant difference. It's 50 pounds more lint per acre than where we just use winter legumes. So I can pretty safely say that winter cover crop is giving us about equivalent to about 120 pounds of nitrogen per acre, at least the equivalent yield there. Now, when we add legumes and the nitrogen, the yield potential does go up. And Dr. Wayne Reeves, who's here today, did some work that showed that where you have a good cover crop, it increases your yield potential because it increases the soil organic matter and a lot of other factors, water use efficiency, and these are dry land yields. So I can tell our producers that now it takes some management. Growing winter legumes is not easy. It's not something you can do change overnight on 2,000 acres of cotton, but it does work, and it is an alternative. Through other experiments, we've seen that a pretty good winter cover crop, if properly managed, can produce anywhere from 50 to 150 pounds of nitrogen per acre, available nitrogen per acre. I generally use about 100 pounds is what I can expect from a pretty good winter cover crop in the coastal plain area of the southeast, that is with crimson clover or vetch, or one of the improved hybrids. But it does vary, and that variation is because of the season and how well it's managed. It takes a lot more management. The third strategy that is available to us in Alabama is using poultry litter. We do produce a lot of chickens. In fact, 62% of Alabama's economy is based upon poultry production, not cotton like it used to be. And we produce about twice as much, many tons of chicken litter as fertilizers used. And you could probably get similar data from Georgia, from Arkansas, from Mississippi, Tennessee, the major poultry producing states. One advantage that we have in Alabama is that our major cotton growing areas, which is really all over the state, we grow cotton from one end to the other. It's not concentrated in any one or two particular areas like it is in Arkansas or South Georgia. But we grow cotton all over, but these cotton fields are in fairly close proximity to our broiler production areas. And we have seen over the last 2 years with high fertilizer prices, every ton of poultry litter that's available is being used by our cotton producers. They have learned the hard way that it is an alternative source of nutrients. On the average, I've been telling our producers that chicken litter, dry chicken litter as it comes out the house, is about a 3-3-2 fertilizer. Actually, these values came from the NRCS, and we're seeing that's going up. It's a little higher than that because the fact that producers are keeping chicken litter in the houses longer and the phosphorus is building up to higher levels. And we're even seeing in some cases that nitrogen is being built up to higher levels because of management. If you put the current fertilizer prices that I showed you earlier to this, you would see that the value per ton is about $124. Those of you from poultry producing states know that you can have a ton of chicken litter spread anywhere from maybe $40 to $60, $70 a ton at the most. That's a bargain, especially if you need that phosphorus. And we did about 13 years worth of research with poultry litter on cotton and corn in Alabama. And these are data from one of the first 4 years of a study where we had conventional tillage showing the relative response of cotton to ammonium nitrate nitrogen up to 120 pounds of nitrogen per acre, as high as we went, and to chicken litter up to a total of 240 pounds of total nitrogen per acre. We know all that 240 pounds is not available. That's total nitrogen in broiler litter. It's equivalent to about 4 tons per acre if you put it out at planting. And you can see that it took about 3 tons or 180 pounds of nitrogen to give us the same yield as 120 pounds of ammonium nitrate nitrogen. And I generally tell our producers that, yeah, you can count on about 2/3 of the nitrogen in poultry litter as being available the year you put it out. Actually, there's no significant differences, or very little significant differences in these two points right here. The last few years of that study, we switched to conservation tillage and had about the same results in that there's really no difference in the broiler litter nitrogen and the ammonium nitrate nitrogen. But when you get out here, about a 3 tons or 180 pounds of nitrogen per acre, certainly you're getting the same yield or even higher yields with broiler litter. It can be stored temporarily on the edge of the field and used when needed. We also encourage manure testing to know exactly what's in there. And finally, the fourth strategy is using the least expensive source of nitrogen. Now, of course, anhydrous ammonia, and these are current prices, is the least expensive source, but we don't have anyone in Alabama, to my knowledge, that's using anhydrous ammonia. It's interesting to hear that they do use it in other parts of the Cotton Belt, but none in Alabama. So our next choice is urea nitrogen, which would be the next least expensive source. Last summer, you could have doubled these prices for urea, but as of 3 days ago, you could buy it locally for 45 cents per pound of nitrogen. The worst case for urea would be if you put it out in the heat of the summer, hot, dry, but we have a lot of humidity in the southeast, a lot of dews in the early morning. You put it on a pasture or a hay field or no-till cotton with lots of residue on the surface, a high pH, and it's broadcast, and you had no rain for 2 weeks. You could expect, and this is what we hear, you could expect high losses. You would expect little or no losses if you applied it early in the spring when it's cool, a half inch of rain within 3 or 4 days. It's what we usually would get in the spring of the year. It's broadcast on an acid, till soil, bare soil. It's injected or incorporated, and it's applied through fertigations, or if you're using UAN solutions, if it's dribbled on the surface. And of course, there are materials out there that you can buy to add to urea to reduce this happens to be a urease inhibitor, to reduce the potential for urea volatilization. But the past 2 years, we've conducted a research on one of our stations in central Alabama, looking at some of these different materials that are out there, including some, Glenn Harris will talk about later, some of the enhanced nitrogen materials. But we looked at some of these materials with and without urea, urease inhibitors, some other materials like calcium chloride. Surprisingly, this past summer, which was a hot, dry summer, non-irrigated cotton, urea, without any other materials added to it, and these are side dress nitrogen rates. This is not total nitrogen, but side dress nitrogen rates produced the highest yield for us. And I won't get into ammonia volatilization, but the reason we think urea worked this year, Kevin, is because this was a situation where it was applied to heavy rye residue, and we think the dry urea went between the stalks of rye there and came in contact with the bare soil, and we had rain three days after it was applied. So we think we do have some strategies. They may not fit every situation, but we do have some strategies to deal with the high cost of fertilizers in the southeastern United States. Thank you.